Hello, Chad. Welcome to Slightly Something Else. I've got a little bit of a cold coming on this weekend.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Always seems to happen when the seasons are changing.
Like we got a lot of COVID going around.
There's another one.
Yeah. Turns out COVID's back. Remember COVID? It's back.
Yeah, well, it never really went away, did it?
No.
Just the whole family has had like a cold, so it's my turn now. Little babies' noses were running like faucets.
I
say faucets now instead of taps. That's what America's done for me.
Oh, no. It's ruined you. It's absolutely ruined you.
Well, welcome to Slightly Something Else, where this week's topic is games that make us feel smart. Because, spoiler alert, I've got a review of Chance of Zenar coming up this week. Paired with something else, because, you know, indie games. Sure. And, it's really become clear to me in recent times that I really appreciate games that have a deductive element.
Same. Yeah.
That's why I like Shadows of Doubt so much. And of course, I'm a big fan of Return of the Obra Dinn. How do you feel about that?
I love it. I like games as a whole that make me feel clever because I feel like that is is clever an emotion? What is clever?
Smug. Smug is an emotion.
Smug? Yeah, well, I feel like smug is the bad side of the coin. I like games that make me feel clever because I feel like it's one of the things that games as a medium can do that none of the other games, or none of the other mediums can do. You know, movies, books, TV shows can elicit feelings of terror and dread and humor and melancholy. But games feel specifically designed because of the interactivity of them to make us to sort of reward physical and mental achievement, and the physical achievement part, like I'm not whatever, it's fine. Beating a boss in Armored Core makes me feel good, I guess, but solving a fucking puzzle, solving a dungeon, solving a puzzle boss, solving, you know, getting to the end of Obra Dinn and realizing I figured everything out, that gave me like a feeling that nothing else makes me feel.
As is so often the case, AAA games have sort of let quite a few genres sort of die on the wayside that indie games are now picking up. And the straight puzzle game is something you don't really see in the AAA circles anymore. Puzzles are just like, you know, like quippy dialogue or mini games. Just something that gets sprinkled on top of like a huge open world experience and just put in there.
Yeah, it's become a, it's in AAA, it's a condiment. It's not a main course.
Of course, in a lot of games, what exactly counts as a puzzle is a debate in itself over the years. I mean, they used to call it a puzzle when you had to press two different buttons to open a door in Quake.
That was a puzzle?
I guess.
Well, they used to say, you mean like two buttons as in like you have two switches? Yeah. Or do you mean two buttons as literally like two keys on your keyboard?
Well, you press one button on a wall and it would say one button to go, and then you'd press the other button on a wall and it would say sequence complete, and they called that a puzzle.
I think it's, I guess legally it's a puzzle. That's the legal definition of a puzzle. Might not be the kind of puzzle I want in a game, but
no, quite. And they used to call, I used to use the term jumping puzzle for like things,
platforming.
Yeah, platforming throughout Half-Life, where you just have to jump onto very narrow ledges to get to places. But when we talk about puzzle, we mean things that actually test the mental acuity. And for me, like the high watermark for that is your detective style game, where the game has like presents the clues and it's up to you to put them together in a smart way. A lot of games have tried to do the detective thing and not really worked out because it's not really about deducing stuff on your part.
Yeah, and a lot of games try to put you in the shoes of a detective, of like a Batman. But that's not really having you go through the actual emotions of deduction.
No, that's a good example. In Batman, all you really do is you use detective vision on a crime scene and look for all the things that go widdly-wee and look at them. And once you look at them all, the game says, right, we figured it out. Well done. No need to dwell. Move on.
Yeah, that whole era of AAA open world games, Assassin's Creed had your things of like, whoa, we need to solve this murder. What happened here? We need to follow the trail of blood. And it feels like going through the motions of like, you know, cosplaying as a detective, but not actually doing anything that gives you those sort of feelings of satisfaction.
But creating mechanics that allow us to deduce something the way a detective would is a fairly difficult proposition. Oberdin does it really well.
Oberdin does it excellently. Yeah.
It would be very difficult to have something like that just as just like an ancillary thing on top of an open world game that does lots of other things. Like we played Chance of Zenar, and I think we both liked the puzzle thing. I think we both, without wishing to give away too much of my review, we both agreed that all that the game's attempt to sort of lean into more action-focused gameplay was kind of a misstep.
Yep. It. I think we also said that if your primary thing isn't stealth, your game should not have stealth.
Yes, I can't think of a single example of a game that had like a token stealth bit where it wasn't an absolute pain in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. But the moments where you're, and I guess to give a short description, it's a game where you you play as a robed traveler who's entered this sort of new kingdom. You don't speak the language of any of the people, and there are sort of different languages based on the kind of caste system.
You're in the Tower of Babel. I never call it that, but it obviously is.
Yeah. And through context clues, through what people are saying to you, through signage, through sort of map layout, through store signs, you have to learn the language of a game and or learn the language of these people. And that helps you communicate with them and solve puzzles that ultimately allow you to move on to the next area. Scratched a very similar itch, I would say, as Oberdin in terms of and even in the way that the game kept track of information that your unknowns and your knowns, the variables, how you would solve them, even sort of falling into that rule of threes, which I think part of the reason Oberdin works so well for me is because it doesn't allow you to, it doesn't tell you you're right until you've figured out three things.
Yeah, it's a good balance, that. Because, of course, with the game, you have to have like that continual sense that we're doing something right. A lot of game design is based around communicating to the player that they're succeeding and doing something right over and over again. And if it's something like a puzzle where you don't know if you're right until everything's filled in, Oberdin has a good balance by having that thing where it only does that every time you get three things right.
Yeah, and so it's enough to where like you can't really like just like brute force your way through it, but at the same time you'll never get too far down a rabbit hole and then realize like, oh, I made a mistake at the beginning and now this entire foundation is wrong and I just wasted a bunch of time.
Well, let's be fair, you can brute force sometimes, but you gotta do a little groundwork before you can brute force. Like
I guess that's true.
How it works in Chance of Zenar is that every now and again, once you've learned enough context, once the game has broadcast enough context clues, it like opens up a puzzle page in your diary and shows an image representing something and you have to put the correct symbol next to it. And depending on what point in the game you're at, there are points when I found I could just sort of brute force that a bit.
Especially if you know two of the three of them for sure, you could be like, well, I only have five different options for this last one, so one of them probably fits.
Just swap it in and out until it clicks.
That
happened in Oberdin as well, when I was down to like identifying the four identical Chinese top men. Swap the names in and out until it clicked, which I guess is unavoidable.
Yeah, and it doesn't give you that same sense of satisfaction, but at the same time, it's better than just being stuck and the game refusing to go on until you know exactly why you know this.
It's a tough balance, because sometimes even the mere act of testing you in Chance of Zenar, it sort of gives the game away. Like, you weren't entirely sure what these words meant, but then the pictures come up and you go, oh.
Okay, that's a sun. They're clearly talking about celestial objects there, as opposed to maybe they're just pointing up at the sky or talking about God. Yeah.
I think I would have preferred if maybe they'd eased off that a bit, made the images maybe a bit more abstract, so there was a bit more deduction involved.
Yeah, yeah. When you, what was it about Shadows of Doubt earlier this year? You know, a rare game that got you to break a rule and really critique something in early access. What was it about that game that really stood out to you in terms of deduction?
I guess for that, it was the aspect of deduction that's just striking off everything that's wrong until only the correct answer remains. The old Sherlock Holmes quote, once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. And I sort of liked that sort of systematic, almost post-dad game energy of going through the possibilities and striking them all off. I mean, I enjoy nonograms.
Okay.
I have a nonogram app on my phone, and that's something I like playing with a lot, because that's, in its essence, that's a sort of deduction game where you just eliminate all the possibilities except the correct one. There's something about that I find fun. Perhaps we could, you know, analyze that further. Something about, you know, keeping things in order, the satisfaction one gets from straightening up the bookshelf.
Yeah. So why... I get the same thing. Like, I feel the exact same way. Why do I feel like both of us then bemoan games that give us, like, a task list in terms of, like, busy work in side quests and open world games? Like, because, what's the difference, I guess, between those two?
Because there's nothing to deduce there. It's just a list. Mm-hmm. I mean, the comparison would be if you had a nonogram where it just highlighted all the squares you had to put in black, and there wasn't any actual deductive element.
Yeah, the busy work feeling, as opposed to, like, you're incrementally getting closer and closer to, you know, achieving your goal or accomplishment.
Like, on the face of it, like, that sort of puzzle should, like, seem at a glance to be really difficult. Like, one of those elimination puzzles where it says there are four people in a line. You have to figure out what all their names are and what height they all are. And give you, like, a little hint, like, Bob is shorter than Janet and Alice is standing on the edge. And if you take that information and, like, make a little chart and eliminate... Uh-huh. The what's impossible based on what you know and discover what the actual correct things are, then you feel smart.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's sort of, I feel like at its core, a good puzzle is, and I've been thinking about puzzles a lot with, you know, Casey and I replaying the Portal games and now doing Portal 2 co-op, and then just replaying a bunch of, you know, Zelda and survival horror games that have sort of puzzles like that in there. I feel like the best puzzles are the ones that have a very simple set of rules, and you approach a situation where you clearly know what you need to do, but the game says, but there's a twist. And it's in Portal, you're like, well, I know I need to press down on this switch in order to open this door, but the twist is when I get off this switch, the door closes. So you have to figure out, well, what I clearly need to do something to hold this switch down. And, oh, up there is a cube, but I need to get up there and bring the cube down. So how do I get up there? And that sort of evolution and escalation in a puzzle game, to me, is the snowball effect, is what separates the best puzzle games from sort of the mediocre, or the best puzzles themselves from the mediocre.
You know, it's funny. It's like there's two different kinds of puzzle game. Like, Portal is one thing and Oberdin is another. Portal and that sort of puzzle is like, here's all the pieces, and you have to figure out in what order to put them.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mm-hmm. It's like the jigsaw. It's the sliding tile puzzle. It's figuring out the correct sequence of things you have to do. Whereas Oberdin and Zenar and my game that I made once, The Consuming Shadow, are elimination puzzles where it's just, here's all the list of possibilities, and you have to, like, strike off what's wrong until the correct one. And all is evident. And the connecting factor is that it's all about getting to a destination indirectly. Like, rather than just saying, this is the one that's correct, you just...
Yeah.
Like, you see what's correct in the distance, and you have to find your way to it, I suppose.
And both of them, like, ultimately lead to that sort of, like, aha epiphany, which is, like, the thing we're looking for. That's the endorphin rush that we're looking for when we play these puzzle games, is, like, the game kind of or us being able to be like, ah, okay, I figured out what you were trying to do here. And if a puzzle game is well designed, in my opinion, once you have that mental aha, then the physical act of going through it is relatively simple, is easy. Once you've wrapped your head around what we need to do in this portal chamber, actually doing it is fairly quick. Once you've wrapped around what happened in this exact scenario in Obra Dinn, checking it off the list is quick. Puzzles, I think, can stumble when you get to that aha moment, and then it asks you to be like, all right, now do everything to solve it. And it ends up being a cumbersome thing with too many steps. And you're like, well, shit, all the goodwill you just gave me from that endorphin rush is thrown out the window now because I have to do a bunch of this, what feels like busy work now.
The aha moment is definitely a thing. There's a, it's even like a term.
Yeah. It's also, it needs to, you need to then look upon it and be like, I should have been able to solve that quicker. Or like, I understand the work that went into this. Like Casey and I were stuck on a Portal 2 co-op puzzle for probably 20 minutes, a single puzzle. And there wasn't that much to it, but both of us were just so stuck in thinking we needed to do X in order to solve it that we just weren't seeing that, like, no, you don't need to do X at all. You just need to do Y. You just need to not think like this. And that's, I feel like in order to kind of be better at these things, you need to almost get out of the way of your own assumptions and ego in a puzzle game. And you need to be like, I shouldn't be thinking like me right now. I should be zooming out and kind of looking at this from a more top down level.
I love those deceptively simple style of puzzle.
And this one, the solution was like super easy. It was very quick once we figured out what we needed to do.
If you just like flipped your brain onto a different wavelength, you'd have seen it instantly. That's not so much the aha moment as the it's like those riddles that you know, where it sounds complicated but the answer is deceptively simple. Have you heard this one? Forwards, I am heavy. Backwards, I am not. What am I?
Forwards, I don't know. What is it?
A ton. Forwards, I am heavy, but backwards, I am not. I am literally the word not backwards. Ha ha! Your brain was on the clever. Had to get your brain on my level to figure.
That was
that
my problem.
Out.
Was I was thinking of a physical object. I was being like, oh, is it like an elephant moving through time? See, and that's clever. Then once you tell me, I'm like, I should have known that. You tricked me with that. The other thing I would have really been liking in Portal 2 co-op specifically is like a lot of the puzzles are just built around communication or a lack thereof, which it's a different sensation than in, you know, any of the other games we mentioned, but you get a similar thing in like It Takes Two, where the two players need to kind of look at a scenario, and they'll do certain things where they'll test your communication skills by having, you know, one of us is looking at this sort of maze head on and the other one is having to go through the maze. And so the two people are needing, like, your communication skills are the puzzle. Like, the thing itself isn't that difficult, but it's trying to describe sort of relatively complex scenarios to the other person, you know, using your words when they can't see.
Yeah, that's a whole other, like, breed of puzzles. We should be making a chart.
Yeah there was that I don't know if you ever got a chance to play Keep Talking and Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
I was just thinking of that. One player is looking at something the other player can't see,
and
the other player is looking at another thing that the other player can't see, and you have to work together.
And that even did in the game's original incarnation, the player who was looking, it was a bomb defusal game where one player is looking at the bomb and the other players have defusal manuals but can't see the bomb. And so
very
but
low
in
tech
the original incarnation
that.
Because
it was literally
in the original
just...
one, the bomb defuser is playing in VR and the other people are literally looking at a physical book. That's how the game was like originally pitched.
Well, in the original game, when it was on Steam before it was, they had a VR version, it was literally just the person with the manual has to like sit not looking at the TV and Pinky promise not to peek. Very low tech, as I say. But it worked. It was I found it was a fun thing to set up at a party when people got bored. One of those parties where everyone's just sort of floating around and checking in different places, and they're just checking on the little bomb defusal game everyone was playing.
Has anyone exploded yet? Yeah, it feels like, you know, there's like a handful, I think, of those kind of co-op games where it works really well. But by and large, I feel like a lot of the ones we're talking about are single player focused. But we've had, you know, a recent string of stuff like the We Were Here series and Escape Academy and stuff like that, where your achievement is a communication one, I guess.
How do you feel about inventory puzzles in the classic adventure game sense? Because I've like looked down on them over the years, especially after I sort of went off adventure games as a concept.
It's, yeah, it's funny, because if we would have had the same conversation 20 some years ago, that would have probably been the main topic of this whole thing, right? Is the inventory point and click adventure, is your LucasArts games, your Sierra games.
Usually comes down to is you explore everywhere you can go and pick up every item that isn't nailed down, and then figure out what keyholes to slot them all into. Sometimes literally a key into a keyhole. Sometimes it's like you have to give the troll a fish before he will let you pass the bridge.
Yeah, I think they can be done well if there is an internal logic behind them. And when you use the thing, you're like, ah, that makes sense. Weirdly enough, I just finished replaying the first Silent Hill, and that has some really good inventory puzzles. That has moments where you'll get an item and it'll be like a bag of blood. And you're like, what the fuck do I do with this? And then you get to this weird creature later on that is clearly like sort of chomping at this bag of blood. And you're like, oh, maybe if I use the bag of blood, I can get it to go somewhere else, which will allow me to sneak past it and get the item. And that works. Or like I got a ring early in the game. And then at a certain point, you find this door where like the chain is broke on it. And the prompt said something like, it's missing a ring of the chain. And I was like, well, I have a ring in my inventory and I have no idea what the hell to do with it. Maybe I should use it now. And sure enough, it worked. There was never a moment where I was like, why the hell does it want me to use? Why should I have assumed that this troll wanted a fish?
You know, there's Silent Hill 2 has some really weird puzzles in it.
It also has puzzle difficulty, right? Like specific, you can like change.
Well, that doesn't change the inventory puzzles. That just changes the riddles. Like the bits where you have to deduce the like 4-digit code for a door based on a document you find in another room.
Oh, so it'll be like more obvious or more opaque.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. But the inventory puzzles are all kind of dumb. Like there's one where you have to like create a fishing line to extract something from a drain.
Mm.
And the only items you can use are a human hair and a hook. And you have to combine them to make a little fishing line. And one might reasonably wonder why you couldn't just get a piece of string from any number of different places. But in actuality, what they were doing there with that puzzle was using it to sort of enforce the story and like the setting of the game, because the human hair you use is found inside a box that's locked with like five different locking mechanisms that you find in the bedroom of a man who was like grief-stricken because his daughter had died.
So this is his like keepsake box, mutter.
Yeah. So you put all this work into opening these five locking mechanisms, and then you open it, and then your character goes, wait, there's nothing in here. Oh, wait, no, there's a single human hair in this box.
Must be an important hair.
And then you use it to get something out of a drain. And it's an interesting case of not making a whole lot of sense as a puzzle, but it does a lot to sort of enforce the tone of the game.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I feel like that's very hard to do, is building a puzzle that like you said, enhances whatever the theme or the tone of the moment is supposed to be, because a lot of times a puzzle is just ultimately a roadblock.
A lot of the time a puzzle is just, you know, the busy work that's stopping you from just like plowing straight through to the next bit of the plot, especially in survival horror games, because all you're supposed to do is explore the environment, find all the keys and put them in the slots.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think puzzles can work as a palate cleanser, especially in horror, right? If things were constantly tense and on edge, then that would sort of dull your senses at a certain point. And so Resident Evil's Spencer Mansion is loaded with really, like, honestly, pretty fucking dumb puzzles where it's like, why? Okay, I guess I'll figure out how to play Moonlight Sonata to open this secret door.
Yeah. Rearrange whereas the three Silent tiles next to the door.
Yeah, whereas I thought Silent Hill's puzzles, like, at least in the... I only played the first game. I'll be replaying the second game soon. But I thought the first game's puzzles were, like... Most of them were pretty... I was like, okay. Like, I get where you're coming... This felt like actual puzzle design as opposed to... I have no idea why this thing exists, but sure. Mm. I mean... Yeah. I didn't have any idea why most of the things existed. Like, why did this school have a piano I needed to play in order for a thing to pop out of the clock? But
well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you're trying to make it work in like a real-world context.
Sure.
But, you know, we're not in the real world. We're in survival horror crazy land.
Yeah. What a crazy land it is.
I remember watching the Silent Hill movie. They actually tried to have that sort of inventory puzzle as part of the plot.
God.
Then, oh, there's a hotel key in this corpse's mouth. That must mean we must go to this hotel room for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. That's really silly. The another kind of puzzle, which we touched on a little bit by mentioning Zelda earlier, but I feel like bosses, you know, enemies can be puzzles in their own. And,
well, quite. Yes.
Yeah. I think you get that through Zelda, and then you get that through a game like Shadow of the Colossus, where I would say every boss is... More a puzzle than like a test of your ability. It's more a test of your thinking.
Yeah, I mean the alternative is just reflex challenge when you get down to it.
Yeah,
just seeing what the enemy is doing and making the appropriate reaction to not get hurt.
And that's where I feel like the difference between the physical achievement and the kind of mental achievement is. I feel like a From Software boss. Is a physical achievement. Like, I can mentally know what I need to do, and it's, can my dumb fingers do it quick enough?
Yeah, and then there's just the sense of enormous relief once you actually get through it.
Yeah, yeah. The other recent thing I played that puzzle-wise really impressed me were how in Tears of the Kingdom, certain shrines would make me rethink all of the tools I had going forward. Like, it wasn't giving me any new abilities.
Oh, you forgot to go. You forgot you had to go through the ceiling power again, didn't you?
Yeah. It was like almost like a constant reminder of like, hey, don't forget you can do this. I was like, ah, yeah, I can do that.
I got stuck down a well once because I completely forgot about that.
And you're like, how the fuck do I climb out of here? You're like, oh yeah, I can do this thing.
That was a weird power. The teleport through the ceiling felt like a dev mode power.
I legitimately assume it was maybe something in Breath of the Wild that was a dev mode thing, and then in this game they were like, fuck it, let's just see if we can turn it into an actual ability for the player. I think a puzzle can break down if it's asking you to do something you haven't done in a very long time. Like, I like the puzzle challenges. Like, I'm even noticing this in clusters of levels in Portal 2, where... It and Zelda dungeons feel the same way, where it feels like a semester of a course that is building towards a final exam. But it's never asking you, hey, remember that thing you did like 6 hours ago? You have to do that again. Hopefully you've been playing the game recently, because otherwise you might not even remember that was a thing you could do. And that always, to me, like, if I've forgotten about an ability in the game, yeah, it's probably my fault, but also like, it's kind of annoying.
I'm thinking of the long jumping in Half-Life again, that you do in the hazard course and then never again till the very end of the game.
Or if you're Casey and I, you don't do the hazard course and then you get to it in the game and we're like, what the fuck do we do here? why is this a thing?
Okay, here's a weird reference. Did you ever play the Monty Python and the Holy Grail CD-ROM game?
I did not, no.
Which, it was just like one of those CD-ROM things where it was just, you know, click on a thing and a funny voice happens. One of those like multimedia showcase things.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a puzzle. It was sort of a joke at the start of the game. In order to start the game, you had to fill in a registration card, and it was like a spoof registration card, all full of really stupid questions with different multiple choice answers. Like, you get in for like a facetious name or something. And then at the end of the game, at the very end, at the Bridge of Death scene, instead of like asking the questions three, like in the film. The bridge keeper quizzes you on the facetious answers you gave in the registration at the start of the game. And you had to remember what dumb thing you had typed when it asked you what your name was.
I like it. I like it. And it wasn't like a thing they didn't like constantly remind you throughout the game what your name was?
No, it was just like you assumed it was just like a dumb throwaway gag at the start, but now suddenly we have to remember what we did.
Yeah. I love that. I miss those sort of like weird little interactive museum things. I remember having a James Bond one, like Muppet Treasure Island, a Simpsons one.
There was an era of video games, like around when the CD-ROM era started, when it was just like showcases of art and sound. You get these like things like, do you ever like have Encarta, the like the CD encyclopedia where...
I love that, yeah.
Used to play on at the school computers all the time.
Yeah, and they would have like little trivia games where like you'd have to go through like a wizard's castle and answer a bunch of questions about history and fish and shit.
Mind Maze, I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. The last sort of note I jotted down about these were the sort of the knowledge-based games, the Metroid Brainius, if you will, where instead of having your ability be a double jump or the ability to use missiles to open up doors, like all of the answers are there right from the get-go, and it is recontextualizing how you see the world around you, and you get that in stuff like The Witness and Outer Wilds and you know, Sam Barlow's games like Immortality and Telling Lies, where you're not gaining any new ability other than kind of your own knowledge when you walk away from a thing.
You know, it's weird, but there's sort of an example of that recently that I played, and that was Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. And one of the things I noted and quite appreciated about that game is that you never unlock abilities. You start out with the abilities to do everything in the game. And it's only like throughout the game you get like little hints from the character member said, hey, have you tried like manualing as you get off the grind rail? And then it's like, oh, this is how you continue your combo. And that's how you learn to play the game. And the advantage of that is you like can restart the game and then just immediately kick everyone's asses in a perfectly natural way because you know how everything works now.
Yeah. It does a great job of kind of recontextualizing everything, which I guess is like, is that how people feel good when they get better at fighting games? Like your character isn't getting better. You are getting better.
Yeah,
like you are not getting better weapons and stats. It is literally you who are smarter.
All the moves are there from the start. You just have to like memorize stuff from the combo list.
Yeah. And that was Tunic last year as well. Like you didn't really gain the abilities
very good
in Tunic.
Example.
Yeah, like
who would have thought you holding down A did something?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you gained the ability to do that. You just found a little scrap of a manual that let you know about it, which I think I always find that really cool. I also think the best puzzles, like, are there puzzles in games that you think about when you're not playing the game? Like, do you ever get stuck at something, walk away from it, and then come upon the solution when you're not in front of your monitor? Like, come upon the solution sitting or eating or drinking
coffee?
Well,
that was always the case when I was a kid playing point-and-click adventure games, because there were no solutions online that you could sneak a look at if you got stuck. So I was, all the time I was playing Monkey Island 2, I just had to figure it out. And there'd be times when I'd be at school and I'd be doing whatever, and then I'd suddenly realize, hey, wait, maybe I'm supposed to do this with this when I get to the thing. And then I'd run home and try it out, and then it wouldn't work and I'd be disappointed.
I was going to say, if it did work, that'd be amazing. If it didn't, that'd be a bummer.
I remember I used to play text adventures on the Commodore 64, and because like the processing power wasn't so great on those, you'd enter a command and there'd be like a few seconds wait before a thing happens, and I couldn't bear the suspense. I'd be like, is this finally the answer? Is this finally the answer that I've been looking for all this time? Oh god, I can't look. I have to go into the other room.
Yeah. Also, puzzles shouldn't punish you for experimentation.
No. Well, that's what adventure games didn't do, of course. There was always only ever one correct answer to complete the solution, even though there's a lot of stuff that you might think would make sense. Like, you're talking about weird logic. There was a Discworld point-and-click adventure game based on the books by Terry Pratchett. Mm-hmm. And one of the puzzles in that was that you had to block a chimney to fill a house with smoke and get rid of the person who's in there so you can do nasty things.
Okay.
And there were huge amounts of random inventory items in that game, and there were a large number of items that one could conceivably block a chimney with, like blankets or just like a bit of wool. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you could actually do, use it, was a stuffed toy shaped like Father Christmas.
Oh.
And that was the puzzle. That was like the weird extra deduction you had to make, the connection between sticking Father Christmas down the chimney.
Yeah, this is like the one thing that makes sense to go in a chimney as opposed to a blanket or some cotton.
Except it didn't really make sense because anything could have blocked the chimney. You just had you could have just put a book on there or something. But because Father Christmas traditionally goes down chimneys, that was the only thing that would work, which is a whole different thread of logic, really.
Yeah, that feels like, you know, I think we talk, especially in those, some of those early point-and-click adventure games, we talk about a lot of the times where you're not using logic, you just need to think about what was the designer thinking that day.
Yeah, that's the trouble, you know,
what sort of a joke were they into, whereas, you know, you read stories about how much time Valve spends doing QA and playtesting and everything, and their own designers realize, like, oh, we've spent 6 months on this puzzle assuming everyone is going to do this exact thing, but it turns out half the players look in the opposite direction when they enter this room. I liked a recent Viewfinder wasn't a perfect game, but its ability to immediately rewind, like you could double tap the button and you would rewind to right before you either took a picture or put the picture in the environment. To me, absolutely encouraged experimentation and was like, hey, there's no wrong answer. Like if you fuck this up, well, there's many wrong answers, but like if you do the wrong thing, there's no penalty. Like just immediately go back and we're not going to make you restart the level. We're not going to make you sit through a loading screen. Just double tap this button and we'll rewind right back to where you were. And that's nice.
Yeah. Not the first puzzle game to do that, of course. Braid would be the classic example.
That was
Braid by Jonathan Blow, of course, who went on to make The Witness.
Yeah, and then nothing else since then. So
he's struggling to think of another thing that could encompass his extremely pretentious personality.
You want to go super chats?
Why not?
We have a bunch of comments related to them.
Plenty to work with.
And remember, your donations this month are going towards Nick's annual Spooktober Festival, where Nick is going to play through a series of spooky games in honor of Halloween with various guests.
Brick his pants.
He's going to brick his pants.
So stop me if this isn't the first one, but Amma Yasser is the first one I've got.
Yeah, we had Pinky in bonus content beforehand, but no message. Welcome, Pinky. But Amr was the next one. Yeah.
Okay. 25 AED, Arab Emirates, Duran, I think. She says, we need more very short games like One Day Better or Death Trips on itch.io. This game type are the only ones I enjoy anymore besides games by Rockstar. Well, as you know, I would certainly appreciate more short games because it means I can have more free time in the week.
But wait, the only games you enjoy are the very short ones and then the massive open world games?
Yeah, it's quite a spectrum between those two.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with One Day Better or Death Trips. So I don't know if you mean short like these games are 45 seconds long or short as in like 2 hours. But there's a decent amount of nice like single sitting stuff like a short hike before your eyes. Even Oberdin didn't feel that long, was it?
If you were smart, you like savored it. That's what I said in my review. Like you're gonna really like this game, but it has absolutely no replay value because it's a puzzle with fixed answers. So try to savor it. Play it like for 1 hour a night.
That's tough though. When something's good, that's tough to do.
I know. I certainly didn't. I wish I had.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Jamie Ford Tuff, welcome to the tip jar. No comments though.
No, and early access.
And then upgrade the membership to early access. All right then.
Do you think Ford Tuff, that's the motto for Ford trucks? Do you think Jamie created the Ford truck because they are Ford Tuff?
Yes.
Incredible.
He is 200 years old. First name, I don't know how to pronounce. Lima. gives $27.90 and says, long time listener, first time getting it live. Thanks for all the amazing content, gents. That was their Super Chat. Probably their last,
so
because I disrespected their first name.
Brazilian Real.
Okay. I mean, you could take a stab at it if you want.
Joao. Yeah, I think A-O is ow, so Joao.
Joao. But what's the little squiggly line over the A signify?
It means Joao's having a good day.
Well, then, good to hear, Joao.
If you have umlaut, you're having a bad day. If you have the squiggly line, you're having a good day.
I got the squiggly lines. On the toilet for half an hour this morning. Potato Hermit gives 250-somethings and says, it makes me feel really smart when an RPG has depth of customization that allows me to intuit a game-breaking build, ideally near the end or post-game, just so it doesn't trivialize the bulk of it. It's hard to intuit when you're first making a character in a lot of games, because you're often asked to select stats without having the first clue what any of them do.
Yeah, that's why I hear stories about a lot of people recently who got 15, 20 hours into Baldur's Gate or Starfield and then just restarted. And was like, or even Elden Ring, you hear those stories and you're like, listen, I'm just going to restart because now that I have a solid foundation for how I want to play this game, I want to get off on the right foot as opposed to sort of banging my head against the wall for 10 hours.
Oh, fucking Lies of P, which is another thing that's going to come up this week in Zero Punctuation. How do you intuit what the fuck the stats in that game mean? Which stat would you like to increase, Marty? Your motivity, your technique, or your advance?
My motivity?
Yeah.
What's motivity? I don't even know what motivity is.
I don't know. Also, make sure you up your stat that increases your Fable and Legion scores.
Oh, yeah. No, I like having a big Fable score.
Why didn't they just call it mana? We all know what that means.
I agree. I don't know.
John Connor gives $2 and says, Titan Souls has puzzle-based bosses in real time. Did you ever play that, Titan Souls?
Yeah. That was the Death's Door crew before they did Death's Door. That was
It's a jolly interesting game. Puzzle? Yes, it's like Shadow of the Colossus, except every boss dies in one hit. I mean, they could have called that game One. You die in one hit, the enemy dies in one hit, you have one arrow and one chance to hit them.
Yeah.
And you just have to figure it out.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Like, that's a, you know, for a relatively smaller game, I think that's an interesting
interesting conceit. Doran Grossman Naples gives $5 and says, Yahtzee and Marty sitting in a tree. TALKING.
Aw, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
We're not in a tree, but we're talking.
How well characterized.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doran.
And then Fungus Finder gives $5 and says, BG3 made me feel smart when I beat a fight with silly mechanics, much like D&D itself. I think TTRPGing is likely the pinnacle of feeling clever. Jack lets me get away with some bullshit scheme. Like, not the episode of Adventurers Nigh that's currently available to members, but the one after it. I think that has some of the most classic bullshit scheming in the entire history of Adventurers Nigh. There's a very bullshit scheme that pays off in that one, so we can get out of having a fight.
Apparently that one is so long that it might need to be chopped in two.
Oh, well, I don't think there's any good chopping point thinking about it.
Apparently the first cut of it was 2.5 hours.
I'm very proud of the bullshit scheming that's unfolded in the course of that episode. You should all check it out.
Do you feel like the bullshit scheming was enhanced by all being together in the same place?
I suppose so, in that that was sort of enhancing the whole experience.
Yeah.
And then I could enjoy Jesse's increasingly disbelieving expression as I recounted my scheme. Bajango gives $5 and says, I would like a series of Marty and KC complete Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes on my desk tomorrow, chop chop. Well, perhaps you'd like to donate for it, Bajango.
We're a good Portal crew. It made me feel good because we communicate very well in Portal. And then I watched on Saturday, Casey, Will, and Frost played Trine 5, three-player co-op. Right. Yeah. They were just screaming at each other the whole time. And so I was like, okay, I feel good that Casey and I make a good, healthy team compared to the three of them. Mm. Remember Trine? I feel like Trine was like really like a really neat game, and then they made 5 of them.
Yeah, the developers certainly seem to be trying to keep that party train going. As long as they can.
I don't hear a lot of people talking about Trine. I know Casey liked the fifth one, but yeah.
It's another kind of puzzling that you don't see so much these days. The sort of almost Lemmings-like puzzler where you just got a bunch of characters under your control.
Yeah.
You have to assign them roles in the solution of the puzzle. PJ Doolin, member for 10 months in Early Access, says, did you guys ever play The Neverhood or Army Krog? I know of The Neverhood. I never played it, and I don't know what the other thing you mentioned was at all.
Armor Krog was from one of the creators of Earthworm Jim, and it looked like a claymation game. I never played it, but it almost looked like claymation Oddworld.
You know, you could be describing The Neverhood at this point.
Maybe they're both made by the same people. Mm. Yeah.
Maybe.
I never played them because I was never a big Earthworm Jim or Oddworld fan.
Hmm. Of course, the developer of Earthworm Jim went on to make MDK, if you're more into that.
I don't think anyone's into that, are they? No. I don't think anyone wants MDK.
I remember liking the first game when it came out.
It's a big deal. It's not a franchise powerhouse now. No, not quite.
Gildon Yetich gives $5 and says, I figured out what Andreia in Starfield was about 5 conversations before the reveal, but I'm not sure if that's being smart or clumsy foreshadowing. Oh, spoiler alert, Gildon Yetich. Now everyone's going to know that Andreia is something.
I thought Andreia was a person in this sentence. Is Andreia not a person in this sentence?
I assumed as much. Don't think I got to whatever reveal he's talking about, but I didn't smell any rats about her.
Do you?
In that I didn't really take any interest in any of the characters in Starfield.
Do you get any? Is it like a similar flavor of satisfaction if you solve sort of a twist before it happens, like a narrative twist? Say even when you're reading books or you're watching movies.
I suppose predict the plot twist. But it does sort of create a sense of contempt for the author once the twist is unveiled. And you're like, yeah, I know. It was bloody obvious.
So why do you think there's a sense of contempt there? Whereas if you solve a tricky puzzle in a game, you're not like, you motherfucker tried to put a roadblock in front of me, but you couldn't stop me. Like,
I don't know. I suppose
when you solve a puzzle in a game, you give them like a polite golf clap.
Well, I suppose I'd give the same polite golf clap if there was a twist I didn't see coming. I'd be like, that's a clever reveal. Well done. Darth Vader is Luke's father. My goodness, who could possibly have seen that coming? Well done, sir. I have the privilege. I'm sure I'm one of the very few people who was able to watch Fight Club without having had the ending spoiled for me.
Yeah. I remember
watching that film and going, oh, what an excellent twist. Now I will have to watch through the rest of the film to see the clues. A well-landed blow, good sir. Mm-hmm. You know Terminator 2?
Yes.
You ever noticed when you watched that if you didn't know Arnie's the good guy now and Robert Patrick's the bad guy, the film doesn't give that away until the point where they all meet?
He yells, get down. He pulls the gun out of the flower box and you think he's going to shoot the kid and he yells, get down. Yeah. But
I'm pretty sure like the original trailers Terminator 2 gave away immediately that Arnie was the good guy. I'm wondering if there's anyone in the world who watched Terminator 2 without knowing that Arnie was the good guy now.
Yeah, and especially you watch the first movie, you're like, oh God, this guy's back. This guy's back and he's going to kill this kid. And then you get to the moment where you're like, that would be a major twist.
Yeah,
like 20, you'd probably be 25 really minutes impressed. Yeah.
There was a time when filmmakers gave a shit about that kind of thing. Alfred Hitchcock reportedly was very, very annoyed at the thought of people giving away his plot twist. Like he'd come out to the cinema and say, don't you assholes give away this twist for the people. This is like half the fun. Mm-mm. Old Hunter 77 gives $5 and says, might there be less of an incentive to design clever puzzles knowing that we can just look up solutions on the internet, guides, walkthroughs, etc.? Yeah, I mean, See, with a lot of games like Obra Dinn, I don't want to look up the solutions on the internet because the whole reason we're in here is to be able to be satisfied with our own cleverness.
Yeah, if I'm at a point where I'm looking up the solution to the puzzles, that's, to me, that's like, you've failed.
Yeah, yeah, that's on the game. Duty.
Yeah, yeah, I've gotten to a frustrating point where I'm like, okay, you don't deserve any more of my time of thinking about this.
Yeah.
But if the puzzles are good, like I never want to touch a walkthrough.
No, not with Obra Dinn, because it would be over so much quicker.
Yeah, and like, what would the? I mean, I guess there's still satisfaction in the existing in the space and the writing and the scenarios. But yeah, it's I think the moments of aha were why I was there.
Aha moments. It'd be nice if someone could like procedurally generate. Like a game like Obra Dinn, so you could always have that aha moment every time. I told you about my new game idea, didn't I?
That sounded great. Like, you just got to finish this first game.
I'm just going to like try not to get distracted by it while I'm wrapping up Starstruck Vagabond, which is perilously close to being finished now. But yes, I have an idea for a procedurally generated deductive style puzzle game, which I guess Consuming Shadow was as well, but not in the same way. Mm-hmm. Dylan Fletcher gives $4.99 and says, what is your all-time favorite Columbo episode? I feel like I've asked me that before, and I will give the same answer. The one where Donald Pleasance is a wine merchant.
Love Donald Pleasance. Never seen that episode, but I love Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance is always good value.
He was great.
I wish he'd valued himself more so that his last film role wasn't Halloween 6.
Halloween 1's really good.
Yeah. He's really good in it.
Yeah.
I don't know why he kept coming back.
Paychecks.
Like, well, someone's got to create continuity in this shitty horror film series. Potato Hermit, member for 1 month in early access, says, thanks for the great content as always, gents.
Thank you, Potato Hermit. Thank you.
Ah, here's a puzzler. Evil British guy gives £1 because he's evil, you see.
So rare £1-pounder.
He could only pony up a single solitary pound. And then
it says retracted.
And then he retracted his message.
And then he has another one below it, and it's retracted as well.
That was his first super chat as well. What a mysterious, evil British guy.
Oh, wait, he comes back, though. He comes back a little bit later as a twist.
Okay, well, let's get to that when we get to that. Yeah. Kamja Ninja gives $5 and says, Techno Babylon avoided the moon logic trap by grounding its puzzles in actual science, which made me feel the game was smart and me very uneducated. I don't know that game at all.
Neither do I.
But Obra Dinn sort of did that. There was aspects of Obra Dinn that you had to use general knowledge to figure stuff out. Like,
Of history at the time.
Yeah, like a dude covered in tattoos would be a Pacific Islander.
Yeah. Techno Babylon was a Wadget Eye Games published what looks like a point and click adventure game.
Oh, Wadget Eye, Dave Gibbons, is it? No.
Oh, one of the old like adventure game gurus. He's the
Gilbert, Dave Gilbert, yeah.
Dave Gilbert, yeah.
Dave
Grossman.
Okay, we're all getting confused now. Ron Gilbert was one of, like, an old school adventure game dude who made
Maniac Mansion
stuff. Yeah, and all that. Dave Gilbert was like an adventure game designer from the adventure game studio crowd who made games like Unavowed and shit like that.
Okay,
I think he's Wadget Eye Games. I think Wadget Eye Games is Dave Gilbert.
I think you're right. And then Dave Grossman.
Is someone else entirely from
wrote a bunch of stuff at Telltale. Also adventure game. Everyone's names are confused. Everyone just needs new names. That's how we solve it.
Being called Gilbert or Dave. It's confusing. Fusionator, member for 3 months in early access, says survival games like Don't Starve do this for me. Kai.
I don't know. Do you I'm not able to match the tempo of a lot of survival games personally.
Yeah, I'm kind of bored of that kind of thing.
Yeah. like even at the time, like I understand their appeal, but I don't know. Like I have a hard enough time keeping myself alive, let alone keeping like a little video game character alive. I had a Tamagotchi as a kid and it died and I felt bad.
The whole appeal of crafting recipes is kind of lost on me at this point.
Yeah.
It's really just buying stuff with multiple different currencies. Anyway, Robert Johnson, member for 2 months in credit, says, definitely a double-edged sword. One man's fun puzzle is another man's garment-rending game stopper. A game doesn't endear itself well if it makes you feel like a Wally. Also, ply, ply, track, track, doint.
Ply, ply, track, track, doint. What was that?
It's a reference to my Galaxy for Food books and the made-up swear words I use in those.
It was very confusing.
Yes, well, that's the knife edge you have to walk making a puzzle game. It can't be too obvious or you won't feel clever, but it can't be too obscure or not enough people will get it.
The Goldilocks effect.
Yeah, and of course everyone's got different levels of intelligence, so you're going to bounce off some people. Okay, evil British guy comes back with £1 and then finally has a comment underneath that. That says, something I've been wondering is how many games or puzzles there are that focus on teaching or letting players practice emotional intelligence. The only one that comes to mind at the moment is poker.
Poker, like the card game?
I guess.
Emotional intelligence. I mean, that's... If we're talking about, like, lying, isn't that, like, Among Us and those sort of social deduction games?
Yeah, social deduction. Trouble? And I always think of L.A. Noire, because the whole premise of that game was that it had all that incredibly expensive facial capture tech because you were supposed to be trying to deduce whether someone was lying from the look on their face.
Yeah, which is really cool in theory.
In theory, yes, but unfortunately...
Ahead of the time in execution.
I mean, they were all acting, so they were always lying. So you just had to figure out when they were deliberately acting badly.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, that's kind of the part, the tough aspect of a, like when you think of what a detective does, that's a tough aspect to
gamify.
To gamify,
Arms and Legs gave us $5 Canadian. It says, missed last week's, wanted to bring up Far Cry 2 on amazing game maps. Ever since Far Cry 3, they dropped it. Really sad.
Yeah, didn't you have like a GPS? You had like a map and a GPS and you had to use them in unison.
Yeah, you had to hold it over your steering wheel while you were driving like a very irresponsible person. And that was their first super chat. Thanks, Arms and Legs.
Thanks, Arms and Legs.
I hope you don't cost an exorbitant amount, Arms and Legs.
I hope you don't get malaria. I think that's what you have in Far Cry 2.
Oh, okay.
I also hope you don't get malaria just in general, because that seems like it would be bad.
Well, it seems weirdly specific that you would wish that.
Yeah. I hope no one in chat gets malaria. That's my wish for the day.
I hope none of them get any diseases at all. What's wrong with you?
No, I hope you get fucking cooties. That's what I hope you get, the kissing disease, because you're doing so much kissing on the side. Nom, 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 nom.
Well, I've got a cold. And I've got a cold because my kids both had a cold and they kept persistently blowing raspberries at me.
That's like chemical warfare. That's germ warfare. What are they doing?
They're at some kind of stage where like just... Because one of them's still mostly pre-verbal, but they do enjoy blowing raspberries at each other as a form of communication, I suppose.
That's the most advanced form of communication that matters to me.
John Connor gives $2 Canadian and says, brick your pants kind of sounds like a stiffy joke. Well, maybe if you're into that, John Connor.
It doesn't? What?
I just say
sounds like shit yourself.
Yeah, I just say brick yourself to mean, produce a large brick of feces in your underpants.
Yeah, I didn't go to Stiffy Town. But you know who is going to go to Stiffy Town? Everyone with all their kissing is going to go to Stiffy Town.
Well, not while they're analysing their cootie infection. Robert Johnson gives $5 Canadian and says, there's a one-story house in which everything is yellow. Yellow walls, yellow doors, yellow furniture. What colour are the stairs? Well, there are no stairs. It's a one-story house.
One-story house. Get the fuck out of here trying to trick us. You can't do that.
Robert Johnson. I mean,
God.
Those sorts of riddles are a lot easier if they're all written out in front of you, and you can look at, you can go back over the text as much as you like.
Yeah. Sorry we yelled at you as well, Robert Johnson. You didn't deserve that.
I'm not sorry.
I think your riddle was very nice.
Pirate Cap'n Jack gives $5 and says, spoiler alert, so tuck live oysters into your eye sockets. What about the puzzle in Silent Hill 4 about the trowel in the woods? Go between the room and woods. Okay, this needs some elaboration. So there's a puzzle in Silent Hill 4 where you're in the woods and there's like a central area, and then there's like a forested path that leads to another place where you pick up a trowel. Uh-huh. And if you're holding that trowel, then as you try to walk back to the central area, then the woods keep repeating themselves.
Okay.
Got it? So like, as long as you got the trowel, you can never get back to the central area.
Okay.
But if both the central area and the place where you found the trowel has a warp point back to your hub base.
Okay.
So if you go to the warp point, put the trowel in your inventory box that's in your base, then warp back to the game, and then go to the central area, and then go back to your hub base and get the trowel back from your item box, then you get to keep it.
That's
so
clever.
You have to exploit the established game mechanics to get past the barrier.
That's clever.
I guess. About as clever as the game gets.
I didn't realize, I don't remember Silent Hill 4. It has like a Resident Evil item box. Does it have like a limited inventory?
Well, it's not limited. You have an item box where you can, that you can put with all, oh, okay, yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, you have an item box because you have a very limited inventory that you can take around the place on your person.
Okay, gotcha.
It's kind of dumb as well, because a chainsaw takes up exactly the same amount of space as 10 bullets.
Yeah, or a key. I mean, that's Resident Evil logic, right? Like, there's a handgun and a key, and then they're the same size.
And there's no ammo stacking. If you wanted more than 10 bullets, you had to use up two inventory slots.
Mm-hmm.
It was dumb. Robert Johnson gives $5, and oh man, he's really got his children's book of riddles out for this one, hasn't
he? We're going to solve this one. I'm proud of us.
Two fathers and two sons are in a car that there are only three people in the car. How is this possible? Because it was three generations, wasn't it? There was a son, a father, and a grandfather.
Holy
two of
shit.
Whom are fathers and two of whom are sons.
Holy shit. That was really good. That
Get out of here with that scrub riddle shit, Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson, keep him coming. That just wrinkled my brain.
Zaratha gives $5 and says, the squiggly line in Portuguese makes the tonic vowel be more bass and nasal. Jaw should sound like shuau. Remember, bass and nasal owl. .br.
I think every word ever should be spelled phonetically.
Nasal, eh? Fusionator gives $4.99 and says, I think the age of theories is making good twists harder to write in a way that satisfies the audience, at least for TV shows. Possibly.
Yeah.
But you know, what I would hate is to be the kind of person who sees that the audience has predicted their upcoming twist and thinks and tries to think of a way to change it. So that it's
them.
Still a twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, give people the win. Like, there have been twists in my ongoing work that I've seen some people have figured out. And I'm not going to change the twist because of that. I'm just like, fair enough. Well done, smart person.
Yeah, it is funny, though, how there's like an entire cottage industry of a trailer or a screenshot or a description of something goes out and then people try to absolutely analyze and dissect every inch of it. They try to freeze frame a trailer to figure out
get the YouTube views in somehow.
Put a big red arrow pointing at something and then a question mark.
Speculate. Thumbnail of some person looking surprised.
He's made
rhetorical question in the video title, etc. Jedi Games gives $5, but no comment.
Dun, and then member
for 38 months in early access, who says, "There is no game" has some of my favorite puzzles.
Did you play There Is No Game?
Yeah, briefly. It's one of them browser games, right?
I believe it started as a browser game, and I played it on Switch, but it's a very fourth wall breaking.
Sort of one of those logical progressions of those old Flash things that was like, don't press the button.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of breaks the rules of you know, you do point and click adventure inventory puzzles, but you need to use the UI to your advantage and move things off of the screen and bring them back.
Andre Driem gives $20 and says, "I think predicting the plot twist is more rewarding if you don't predict it too early in the plot. There is a rewarding sensation if you become involved in it enough to see where things are going." Okay.
I mean, I think a plot twist is good if you... I mean, the idea is that you come to your revelation, or I guess like the hope is that you come to the revelation simultaneously with the character, right? Is you're watching The Sixth Sense, and you and Bruce Willis both come to the same revelation at the same point.
I think it was something like Silent Hill 2. I mean, you could sort of immediately guess at where the plot's going from like the initial setup.
Yeah.
Like grieving man is looking for the wife he believes is dead. You can sort of like have an idea in your head of one of the most likely outcomes is going to be. But it sort of drifts out of your mind as you go through the course of the game because you're getting distracted by all the violence and horror and weird imagery. So when it comes back in the end, you're like, oh shit. I hadn't even been thinking about that, and it turns out I was right. Mm-hmm. And it can still be satisfying when that happens.
It's also, I feel like that sort of twist is more, I feel like we're more tuned into the idea of that now than maybe we would have been if we played it back in 2001. Also, PS2 in 2001. Like, the holiday season, 2001 PS2, you had Silent Hill 2, Eco, Final Fantasy X, Metal Gear Solid, Sons of Liberty, Jak and Daxter. What a fall. Holy smokes. A lot of games.
There you go. Skellerboy 333911 with $2 and more children's riddles from their children's riddle book. What's a seven-letter word that holds every letter? Mailbox. Skellerboy 333911.
Oh shit! Get I thought it was the alphabet.
Get out of here. Letters. Yes, it's eight letters.
I would have got that wrong.
Dumb old Skellerboy with his dumb kiddie riddles.
Someone Skellerboy, you got me.
Someone give me a clever riddle.
Oh, no.
Jackson Jewell, member for 15 months in early access, says, "Yahtzee's children committing war crimes." Well, I'd be fine with that if they just went to bed consistently.
You'll take the cold if you can just get a full night's sleep.
Wesley Thomas gives $2 Canadian and says, "Off topic, how do you guys feel about Unity?" I suppose I look up from my Game Maker project and go, "Huh, what's everyone getting so angry about over there?" And then I look down again.
Yeah, that's such a clusterfuck that they keep going back on. And even if they completely reverse every single decision, I feel like you've lost a lot of developer trust there. Unity, you stepped in it.
Why does this keep happening? Why does it keep happening with like shitty CEOs try to enforce some incredibly shitty money-making scheme and then... not because they're evil, but because they're really dumb.
Rich people are genuinely out of touch with how reality works and with how every other person exists in reality.
Another symptom of late-stage capitalism, I fear.
The biggie.
And Fungus Finder gives $2 and says, "Puzzler, what bodily dysfunction is thake-thake? Is it Parkinson's when you've got a lisp?"
I don't get it. What's thake-thake?
I don't know what they're on about.
I'm going to Google thick thick.
Okay. Robert Johnson comes back with $20 Canadian and says, "You guys aren't always such good sports. Lots of love."
I'm always a good sport. I love sports.
Is that what you
Football,
call it? Sport.
Basketball.
I call it sport if there was any challenge involved in your pathetic riddles, Robert Johnson.
baseball. Bowling. I'm just naming sports now. I still don't understand what fake means.
Lacrosse. Lacrosse is a sport.
It is. It's also a city in Wisconsin, which makes me confused. When people say lacrosse, I think of the beautiful lacrosse of South Central Wisconsin, which is probably what most people think of.
Okay, Fungus Finder gives $5 and says, a tree is behind six gates. Each gate has a guard that takes half your fruit and returns one to you. How many fruits do you pick to get back with fruit? I mean, oh, that's maths, Fungus Finder. That's not fun riddles. You should ask my wife. She's like a maths graduate. She likes maths riddles.
I feel like if I had a pen and paper, I could do it. Or there is no fruit. Or it's fake.
Yeah, it's fake. That's the answer now. Liam Omega gives $5 and says, hi guys, been a fan for a long time, keep up the great work. Also, how do you feel about the upcoming Persona 3 Reload?
I'm really excited. Thanks for asking, Liam. We're both really excited to it, and we're really looking forward to playing games, and we both like remakes because it allows a new generation of players to experience the joy of an old game.
Do we now? Oh, well, you know, another way you could allow a new generation of players to experience an old game.
How's that?
Just let them play the old game, fuck's sake.
That as well. We're also excited for Bloober Team's remake of the hit game Silent Hill 2.
Well, now you're just trying to get a rise out of me.
What if it's good?
Well, then...
It won't be good. It won't be good. It probably won't be good.
I guess I'll be somewhat discombobulated, and I will go, my goodness, what a complete breakage of pattern. I suppose I'll be angry in the same way I've been angry about the One Piece live-action adaptation being apparently good by some accounts.
Good. It is good. You know who else likes it? Jack Packard. We got another one.
Yeah, that makes me angry because it's an anomaly. It defies the precedent of live-action remakes of cartoons, and it's going to ensure we keep getting the fucking things.
Yes. What a time to be alive.
So, yes. Even if the Silent Hill 2 remake is good, it will still make me cross. Camp Ninja gives $5 and says, oh, you must play Techno Babylon. Slightly camp air to that phrase, Camp Ninja. Some dollars to buy and play it at a speculative future or pocket reality when your free time is not hypothetical. Probably costs more than $5.
They should make a game called Techno Baby Lion.
Techno Baby Lion?
Yeah. They could play it for hidden gems. It would be technically a hidden gem.
Well, I suppose it would be. Is it called a Techno Baby Lion because that's its favorite genre of music?
It is. It puts in a pacifier, it pops Molly, and it just dances all night with glow sticks.
Pops Molly?
Yeah, Molly.
Wow, you're really down with the kids, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
The way you pronounce that, it was...
Party drugs.
Yes, it's very awkward. John Connor gives $5 and says, if Jesus walked into a beauty salon, I doubt he'd want lashes or nails done. Not a puzzle, just a giggle.
That was lashes and nails, I get it. I get
very,
it.
Very droll, John Connor.
From the crucifixion, I get it. I understand.
Robert Johnson gives $5 and says, mother of all brackets, I meant to say, you are good sports, plying autocorrect.
Mother of all brackets.
That's more Galaxies of Food swears.
Oh, gotcha. Sometimes I don't know if there's just things I don't know, if they're things that you created.
Yes, people do like to tease you with those.
Sometimes it can be both, yeah.
Excuse me. Wesley Thomas gives $2 and says, what have I got in my pocket? Open brackets, you'll never guess. Fails to close brackets.
Wasn't that, that's how Bilbo Baggins tricked Gollum in The Hobbit.
That shit wouldn't fly in any coding language I'm aware of, Wesley Thomas. No. You're like, where's the close parentheses, idiot? We ain't compiling this game till you sort that out.
Oh, I thought you meant the riddle of guess what's in my pocket, because Gollum should have just murdered Bilbo there. He should have just caved his head in.
Hey, he agreed to a riddle contest. He was bound
by the
rules.
Not a riddle, though. That's a goof. That's a goof. That's not a riddle. That's like fake. That doesn't even make sense. You haven't to bring it back to puzzles. You haven't created the rule set and taught us the rule set in order to use those tools to solve.
The dude lived in a cave eating fish for 400 years. I'm surprised he even knew what a riddle was.
Yeah, probably did. He probably did a bunch of weird cave cranking as well. A little sick, little pervert.
Yes. Aloof alpaca.
Aloof alpaca's here.
Yeah, he shows up with $5, which isn't very aloof of him, and says, "Hi, Yahtzee and Marty, long-time listener, first time catching the podcast live. Don't have anything to add to the topic, just wanted to say hi."
Aloof alpaca, welcome, and thank you so much.
Well, that's a weird note to end on, but that was the last Super Chat.
Yay!
Yay! Thank you for listening to Slightly Something Else, the weekly podcast where we talk shit. And then talk shit about people giving us money.
That's 100% what we do.
So, coming up this week on The Escapist, my usual zero punctuation that's coming out for everyone publicly, is... which one was it? Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, yes.
Correct.
But the one that's coming out for members, it will be an indie double bill. I'll give you a clue. One of them's Chance of Zenar, and the other one's Lies of P. Oh, I guess that wasn't much of a clue, was it? That was just flat out saying what it was.
Yeah. That was a quake puzzle where you just got to hit the two switches to open the door.
Yeah. I was going to say they both involve some method of communication of some made up word.
There you go.
What else we got coming up on The Escapist this week, Marty?
Later today, we have Hidden Gems, Forgive Me, Father, which is like a spooky Lovecraftian...
Oh, yeah, I've played that.
...first-person shooter from a little while ago. Yeah, so I'll be playing that. Nick is out in Iceland premiering the Eve documentary, and so most of the streams should be continuing normally. I think Jack might be streaming something in Nick's slot tomorrow. Nick's Dark Souls slot, so tune
Nick
in for
was
that.
Really looking forward to going back to Iceland. I remember when he came back after the first time, he was like, I'm going to retire there someday.
I asked him, is there a bar or restaurant you're excited to visit? And he said, the American bar. Although he said there's pictures, there's like NASCAR and Ronald Reagan shit everywhere, which made me laugh. And I'm like, okay, I'd want to go to this American bar as well. That sounds very dumb.
Yes, we know there's one more super chat, but we're in the middle of like wrapping up. So we need to finish wrapping up first. Jesus.
Robert Judson, how could you? After all those riddles, how could you? So yeah, all the normal streams, and then check out Frost's latest episode of The Stuff of Legends went up this morning on the great World of Warcraft funeral that went awry, which is a story some of you might know, but the video did an excellent job of telling that story, so go check that out.
Oh yes, that old chestnut.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've got extra punctuation dropping for everyone on Thursday. And, of course, Adventure is Nigh. A new episode currently available to members. And it will be going out for everyone on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Okay, then. Let's read this super chat you're all so excited about.
We have two of them now.
Oh, Doran Grossman Naples gives $20 and says, a year after being rescued from a ship adrift at sea, a sailor visits a restaurant atop a cliff with a gorgeous ocean view. He orders the albatross soup. He takes a single bite, then walks to the edge and jumps. Why? This is one of those dumb riddles where there's some important piece of information they haven't told you, isn't it? And there's literally no way of intuiting it.
Yeah.
I don't know. He decided he wanted to kill himself because the albatross soup was really nice.
Drift at sea, the sailor visits the restaurant at the top of the gorgeous view. He orders albatross soup, takes a single bite, then walks to the edge and jumps off. I feel like I've heard this one. I feel like he left out some details, but it makes sense. He was adrift at sea with other people, and they had to resort to cannibalism or something. And he took a single bite and realized that in the restaurant, it's humans. Does that make sense?
Okay, how about this?
That doesn't make sense.
Someone gave him like a soup that he was told was albatross soup, but was actually human soup. and he'd always suspected in the back of his mind that it might have actually been human soup. But when he got to a restaurant and tasted actual albatross soup and realized it didn't taste anything like what he'd been given earlier as albatross soup, and he realized he'd eaten humans, he jumped off and died.
It doesn't matter if that's not even the right answer. That's the correct answer now.
It's the dumb as hell answer if it is the correct answer.
It's a Shyamalan twist. That's what it is.
Oh,
no, Liam Venezia. Where did your message go?
Apparently that was it. That was a very dumb riddle.
I thought it was great. We solved it. We solved it using
Speaking as someone who solved it and therefore couldn't be accused of being bitter at being outsmarted, that's a very dumb riddle.
I thought you were going to say speaking as someone who's accidentally eaten human before.
Who knows? Who's to say that we all haven't accidentally eaten human? How do we? Can we seriously trust what they put in pork pies these days?
Think about it. Can we trust it?
Anyway, Liam Venezia gives £5 and retracts his message. What a sook!
There was a message, and I feel like I read it, and then I don't know where it went, and I don't remember it. So, rip.
All right. Well, that'll be it from us then. Yeah, I'll want to see some cleverer riddles next time, you crapouts.
You crapouts! I love these riddles. Well done, everybody. Your riddles are very good.
It's one of those riddles that Carl Pilkington used to really annoy Ricky Gervais with.
On the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, because he never really understood them. Anyway, time to go. See you next time.
Bye, everyone. Have a good rest of your day.
Here's a small, adorable dog. He's going for a walk now.
Dogs.
Bye.